Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of Panning the Stream. My name's Dan Reichert. I'm one of the hosts of this here podcast. Sitting across from me, my wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Did we always say episode? I get up in my head about, I said, like, welcome to a new episode. Welcome to a new episode.
No, I was thinking about that. Like, once you said that, that's all I could think about. Like, yeah, I guess it is a new episode, but.
It didn't sound right. Do I usually say welcome to a new edition?
No, you usually. Welcome to the new? I feel like you usually just say welcome to Panning the Stream.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's it. Yeah. Okay. Well, I really just boned that up, didn't I?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a day of failure. You couldn't get your most wanted fast food item of all time, an item that you said was more you than you are.
Yeah.
The Pizza Hut Cheez-It, whatever it is.
The Cheez-It pizza.
It's called a pizza?
Whatever the fuck it is.
Pocket,
it's a giant, it comes in a thing of four, and they look like just big old Cheez-It pockets, and I saw Tim Turry tweeting about it last night, and just made me so sad that I'll never get to experience that, apparently.
You never get to experience
Well, I'm thinking about walking to the one at Madison Square Garden after work one of these days, and seeing if I can get one there.
Yeah. Because
there's Pizza Hut, okay, Pizza Hut was king growing up. In the Midwest. They were synonymous with pizza the way McDonald's was synonymous with, like, burger and fry fast food places.
Okay.
And you grew up out here on
I
the
did.
East Coast
yes.
near New York City. I have found that in California when I lived there and in New York, Pizza Hut is not the king as I know it from growing up.
So, I mean, you had like a ton of Pizza Huts. You had no Domino's or anything?
We had them, but like, if you ever had pizza, mm-hmm. ever, I mean, my entire, even if I went back there now, you know, it's not like it was a back in the 80s, back in the 90s thing. It's like, it's still the case. It's like, if somebody's ordering pizza, you know, 8 times out of 10, it is going to be Pizza Hut.
Well, when we were over for our friend's wedding a few months ago, after when we got back to the house and we were all drunk and stuff, they ordered Papa John's.
Yeah, there's a lot of that too. I would say Pizza Hut was number one, and then it was kind of between Domino's and Papa John's for number two, as far as, like, frequency.
Hmm.
But, oh, man.
You didn't have any just, like, regular pizza places that weren't chains?
There was Minsky's, which is, I think, more of a local Midwestern one. They would be around. It's nothing like here. I mean, there'd be chains like Old Chicago and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But it was Pizza Hut. 648-8888. You call that up, they bring you pizza.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I'm shocked and saddened, to be honest, that I'm not able to call. And there should be 6 Pizza Huts serving our apartment.
Yeah, it is crazy. Unfortunately, we have to settle for, like, the best pizza we've ever had a few blocks away.
I'm not gonna talk shit on New York City pizza. I think it's incredible. Some Joe's down in the Village, some Pizza Supremo over by MSG.
What is the one in the Upper East Side that we really like?
Oh, the PQR?
PQR.
Yeah, that place is super
really good.
Like, no, New York City pizza is incredible.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just want some straight-up garbage.
Hmm.
And actually, honestly, that was let's cut to something we usually do at the end, is suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion for the folks at home this week is if you're ever given an opportunity in life, you need to grasp it, because not everyone gets those opportunities. And I don't have the opportunity to pick up a phone and have a pizza in the shape of a Cheez-It arrive at my house.
Right.
And I'm saddened, and there's nothing I can do about it.
It is an unfortunate situation. You're less fortunate than other people.
I agree. So if you are one of the fortunate folks in this great country that can pick up a phone or type something in on your keyboard, and then 4 magical Cheez-It-shaped pizza-like things show up at your house, just, you know, carpe diem, is that seize the day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a little bit of motivation in there, a little bit of a straight-up suggestion. My suggestion was just going to be the Great British Bake Off is back. So
yeah, that seems like a very pleasant show.
They're airing it kind of live, like every Friday it's a new episode, instead of just putting the whole bundle up on Netflix at once.
They're airing it live on Netflix?
Not live, but like they
The episode goes live.
It goes live like a week before it's on Netflix. And then, so yeah, instead of usually it's like the whole series is done, the whole season is done, and then they put all the episodes up at once.
Oh, so it airs on a television station and then comes to Netflix.
It's it's a British show.
Is it like a BBC thing?
It used to be BBC. Now it's some other British channel.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, suggestions up front. There you go, folks.
Front loading the podcast.
Some food related suggestions there. Hey, if you're tuning in for the thing we do on this podcast, the thing we do is watch things on Netflix or Hulu or what have you. The streaming internet. It's all the rage with the kids today. You know what else the kids love? The Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Kids love to break bad these days.
They do. They're constantly breaking bad.
It's a highly relatable tale of a chemist turned chemistry teacher turned meth cook.
Kingpin.
Yes.
Turned dead guy.
Then, yeah, then he dies.
Yeah, which we assume if you're listening to this episode, you're probably all caught up on Breaking Bad.
What a show.
One of the best of all time. I know that's not a controversial opinion. I know it is beloved by millions and millions. I watched it as it aired. Actually, I started watching it when I lived in Kansas, actually. It's actually, it's been a while. It started in like 08, yeah, 09, something like that. My roommate Trevin at the time turned me on to it early in season two. And so I caught up on his DVD of season one, and I started watching live in season two and watched every episode. Like, that was like appointment viewing.
Yeah,
and especially when I lived in Minnesota, like that was during like the heyday of like seasons four and five with like all the stuff with Gus and obviously the finale and everything. And it was a thing where it's like a bunch of us Game Informer guys, we would all go to Ben Reeves' place or we would go to Brian Boar's place and we would all just gather around the TV and watch it live. And it was like an event, you know?
It was great. I feel like I got into it a little late. I probably got into it in like 2012 and then I went and like, I downloaded all the previous episodes and then my family and I started watching it. So we were able to like binge the first three seasons, I want to say.
Nice.
And then the subsequent two seasons we had watched as it aired. And it was always, like, I feel like that doesn't happen anymore. Like where you have like a show that you watch with your family, like live as it is happening, you know, you make, you like put it on the calendar and like everyone is there and really into the story. And
I feel like Game of Thrones did that with some people. Like, I mean, people would have like watch parties.
Like if I was in New Jersey when, you know, it was on, I would definitely watch it with my parents.
Totally. But, yeah.
I mean, we were all really into that show. Except I remember at the, towards the end of the show, that one scene where he's like, say my name.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, Heisenberg. My mom then said, who's Heisenberg? After watching the entire series up to that point.
That's kind of a critical part of that show. She knows he's like moonlighting as a meth dealer, right?
Yeah, I assume. Okay. I mean, she watched the show.
She knows the teacher and the hat guy are the same person, right? Or does she think Bryan Cranston has a equally talented twin?
The hat guy.
Yes. I thought seasons one, two, and three got progressively better each one. I remember, like, by season three, I was obsessed.
Yeah.
And I actually saw the last episode you had paused. I think you're on the episode called 1 Minute, which, if I remember right, the end of that episode is one of my all-time favorite TV scenes. I remember that just being incredible, if it's the one I'm thinking of. I don't want to say too much because, like, I know you've seen it all. But
I've seen it all, but, like, I started rewatching it just, like, as part of the El Camino hype. And I didn't finish rewatching it before the movie, so I'm kind of, like, in the middle of season three right now.
Yeah.
And I remember the big beats, but there's so much I forgot about and stuff, so it's fun to watch it again. Man, that show is so good.
Yeah, I walked in while you were watching, I think it was earlier today, it's the scene where Hank just shows up at Jesse's and just beats the fuck out of him.
Yeah.
Like, what was that? Like, he fakes a call from Hank's wife to get him...
Well, it was that scene where Hank is like hot on the trail of Jesse because he knows that Jesse has an RV and that it's a rolling meth lab. So Walter finds out about this and then goes to the junkyard where it's being held to have it destroyed. And then Badger tells Jesse and then Jesse comes to keep that from happening. And then Hank immediately comes because he was on the tail of Jesse. So there, Walter and Jesse are locked in the RV with Hank right outside.
That's right.
Yeah, so...
isn't he looking in bullet holes and, like, it's really tense?
Yeah, it's super tense. And then Walter has an idea and he calls Saul, whose assistant calls Hank and says she's the police and that her wife, his wife was in an accident, so...
That's right, and that's why Hank is especially pissy.
Yeah.
He's a cranky, tough guy in that show, if I remember right.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of, like, racist stuff that I didn't remember about him, but
was Hank, like, I don't remember, was he like straight up racist?
I mean, yeah, he doesn't like Hispanic people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I don't remember that wrinkle to his character, but
yeah, well, he just makes fun of him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he Like, I just remembered him as a solid dude.
Yeah.
Which he, like, is, like, a reliable, capable guy. But, like, that's, you know, I guess in that profession, you know, working in the, at the DEA in New Mexico, there's probably a lot of, like, Mexican drug cartel stuff he has to deal with. So not that I'm excusing behavior at all.
I do remember in the earlier seasons, it seemed like they were positioning him as this, like, obnoxious meathead brother mm-hmm. of Skyler. And then, like, obviously, as the show went on, like, near the end, he is seen as kind of this, like, flawed, but ultimately, you know, like...
The, he's, like, I mean, obviously the show is about Walter, but he's yeah. the force that, like, you weirdly don't want to win, but he is the one that is representing good in the show, in a way.
Hank?
Yeah, or at least law enforcement, right?
Right,
which
yeah.
maybe shouldn't be considered good, but...
Well, I remember there was a lot, like, that show was one of the shows that was really difficult to, like, just straight up root for characters, mm-hmm. because... Virtually everyone, like, had these things where it's like, okay, Hank is, you know, doing good things law enforcement-wise, but, like, also seems to be kind of a shitty dude at times. Yeah. Like, you want to root for Walter White early on in the show, but clearly the whole point of the show is that he progressively becomes a worse and worse person.
Yeah, but I still remember rooting for him at the end.
Yeah, I feel like near the end, like, there were just, like...
The Walter at the end of the show versus the beginning of the show are two completely different characters.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's positioned as way more sympathetic early on.
Oh, yeah. It's really interesting to see the evolution of it, because the first season, there's so much, like, levity in it, because he's just a chemistry teacher. He's really, like, a fish out of water in that first season. And then he starts to embrace the role a little more. And then I feel like the turning point was when he didn't save Jane from choking on her own vomit.
Yes.
And because then it was clear, like, he's willing to just put his self-interest above, you know, someone else's life even.
Yeah.
That obviously had huge consequences with the midair collision that killed, like, you know, a ton of people.
Yeah. And I remember, like, the Jane's death was like, okay, he didn't kill her, but he could have saved her. Mm-hmm. And then it just, like, it kept kind of ramping it up where it's like, oh, there's that scene where he hits those guys with a car and then just straight up shoots him in the head, you mm-hmm. know? And then it's like, okay, he's becoming more and more okay with just, like, murdering
people.
Right,
to the point where, like, other people, like, fear and respect him.
And he's, like, getting off on it.
Right.
And, like, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's such an interesting character study, because there's this guy who, you know, obviously was this chemist who had so much promise and contributed to, like, the Nobel Peace Prize.
Nobel
Peace Prize, or whatever it was. And then he just gets down on his luck, and he's, like, a chemistry teacher in a high school, and he's, like, so, like, stepped all over and, like, you know, kind of bossed around by his wife a little bit and, like, you know, just getting sad hand jobs.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
While she's on eBay.
Oh, and I forgot that scene, like, once he does one of his first, like, meth dealer things, whatever, mm-hmm. he comes back with all his confidence and is like, whoa, what's going on in bed here?
Yeah, you know?
Like,
yeah.
That's right.
But, yeah, the relationship between him and Skyler is really interesting. Skyler... I know. I feel like the show doesn't have people that, like you were saying before, it doesn't have people that are straight up good and straight up bad. Like, Skylar, obviously, you know.
That's a sympathetic character.
It's kind of hard sometimes to have sympathy for her, because the one time when she, like, has sex with her boss, like,
oh,
just goes home and, like, he's making dinner for everyone and she's like, oh, I fucked Ted or whatever.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Then it's also like, well, she really wants him to divorce her, or she really wants him to agree to the divorce but he won't agree to it. That's why he's, you know, because she knows at that point that he's a drug manufacturer.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I think I remember a lot of the, like, you know, the big bombastic scenes and, like, the really, like, thrilling tense scenes mm-hmm. and stuff. And I kind of forget a lot of the details of the, like, you know, interpersonal stuff and the family stuff, or like, oh, Hank's wife is shoplifting, you know, right. like that type of stuff that didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling you this earlier, but, like, rewatching Breaking Bad, the thing that I feel like other shows are, like, just not really, no other show has been able to emulate this quality. Like, the whole show feels like a singular unit. It's, like, such a natural progression. It doesn't feel like they're making it up as they go along. It really feels like everything was planned for, even though, you know, I feel like most people are aware of the fact that Jesse was supposed to be killed off in the first season.
But, right.
But, like, it feels like all the pieces were set up before. Like, Walter's character, like, his fate was known when they started filming that show. You know,
oh, they
mean?
Were open about it. They were like, hey, this show is going to end with him dead. Yeah. And, like, it's just a matter of, like, we don't know if it's going to be a bullet or if cancer is going to get him or what the deal is.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, you know, we talk about the sympathetic characters and everything, and this this movie is Jesse Pinkman, mm-hmm. Aaron Paul's character, after like directly after the events of the final season.
Who I feel like is one of the most sympathetic characters in the show.
And that's what I wanted to ask you is because you're kind of watching it now. You're around like season three or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember like if he is one of the more sympathetic ones or if there was... Was there stuff in the early seasons where he's like, I know he's always kind of like obnoxious and cocky and stuff, mm-hmm. but like, was he ever just doing like inexcusably shitty things?
He was really obnoxious and cocky in the first, like for most of the, for all the first season and most of the second season. And he makes stupid, like short-sighted choices. And like ultimately he starts doing heroin with Jane and stuff. But then he goes to rehab and he gets clean. And then after that, it seems like he accepts that he's the bad guy and just kind of stops trying to fight it and just embraces his role as this meth manufacturer, this cook. And, you know, he's more confident now because he knows how to make meth as good as Walt at this point.
That's right. Is there ever a point where he's making it independently and selling it?
Yeah, that's like kind of what's starting to happen now in the show.
Okay, because I remember like
where I am in the show right now.
So I remember there's the part where is Gus a big factor? Because I remember they were in like Gus's lab for a while. Is that after? That's more like season four, right?
No, Walt is in Gus's lab now.
Okay, mm-hmm. in that like really nice like high quality lab and everything.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. That's where like the fly episode and all that stuff mm-hmm. was. That's right. So I was looking up some stuff because I remember that the show, like all of the events of the show take place on a pretty accelerated timeline. Mm-hmm. So, the entirety of the show takes place within two calendar years.
Wow.
And so it's supposed to take place between like late September 2008 to early September 2010.
Wow.
And because, you see how old he is. Cause remember there's like the cake or the bacon with the 48 or 49, whatever, however old he was. And so I'm trying to remember at the beginning of the show, was Jesse actively in high school?
No.
Okay, was he freshly out of there? Like
no.
Okay, so he's supposed to be in.
They don't say exactly when he graduated, but he says like, "Oh, that was a while ago that I was in your class." Something that effect.
Gotcha. Okay, I couldn't remember if he was still there because I was trying to do the math on it because Aaron Paul is 40, mm-hmm. and so it's like I feel like he was depicted as like mid-20s at the oldest, right in the show.
Yeah, I think he would be in his mid-20s because they say when Jane dies, and I assume they're a similar age. They say she was dead at 26, so I assume it's probably around there.
So I guess Hollywood has done crazier things than having a 40-year-old play like a mid-20s person. You know, he still looks youthful. It's
looks young, for sure. Yeah. For sure. I mean, his face is a little puffier, for sure, but yeah. The aging stuff is interesting. Like, I'm rewatching the show again, so a lot of these people's faces are fresh in my mind. And Badger and Skinny Pete in the movie, they look like pretty much identical to what they look like in the show.
Yeah.
Jesse's parents, especially the mom, aged considerably, as did Todd. I mean, he still looks young, but he put on a lot of weight. Like, when you go back to that, like the actual show, he was very skinny.
Yeah, that was the one I noticed the most mm-hmm. was Todd because mm-hmm. I remember him seeming like kind of a youthful dummy in the show, and now he definitely seems older. And he's shown up in other stuff. We saw him in that Date Night movie and some other stuff. He's gotten some work.
Yeah, he has. He's good at playing that like creepy, kind of makes you uncomfortable guy. But yeah, I forgot how terrible his character is in the show.
Oh yeah, he's a total sociopath. Yeah. I forgot about that because there's that scene, well, again, if you're not there yet, well, I guess we're just constantly spoiling stuff on this podcast, where he shoots the kid mm-hmm. on the motorcycle. And I'm trying to think, he shot Brock's mother, Andrea?
Yeah.
So like,
and then also he's just complicent in having Jesse locked in a cage.
Oh yeah, and like associating with these white supremacists and everything. Like he sucks. And also he seems like full on sociopathic, like no emotion about any of it.
Yeah, like he kills his housekeeper for finding like a little bit of his money. And then he's like, what do you think she was looking up in the encyclopedia? M for Mexico? Like it's just like not even joking. Like
right. And she's like rolled up, like her body is rolled up in the carpet while he's mm-hmm. just like there's no urgency of like getting around. He's just like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess we should take her out and bury her. She was nice, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like, whoa, Jesus Christ.
Also when Jesse stumbles upon her body in the kitchen, it looks like she's been there for a while. So he's probably just like, you know, walking around this corpse decaying on the ground.
Yeah, that was an interesting character, I thought for sure. Like obviously one of the more just straight up evil ones mm-hmm. on the show, I think.
Yeah.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But yeah, he is one of the many characters from the old show that died by the end of the series. Mm-hmm. That, because I think Jesse chokes him with a chain at the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So they pretty much do a lot of fan service stuff. Like we see Mike Ehrmantraut, you know, he's at the beginning. I think it's right before Mike dies is when that flashback mm-hmm. was. And then Walter gets a scene. It's a pretty inconsequential one. It's them like eating at a diner, but you know, I feel like they felt like they had to get Bryan Cranston in there if they're going to do a Breaking Bad movie.
Right.
Nice to see him. You know, nothing too substantial there. I don't think any of the flashbacks really outside of Todd and maybe like Badger and Skinny Pete kind of actually played an active role. Well, Todd's still flashback, but the events of that play into what happened in El Camino.
Were there any? I don't think there were flashbacks with Badger and Skinny Pete. I think that was all.
Right, I guess I'm just talking about like returning characters in whatever form, mm-hmm. where it's like, but Todd's flashbacks kind of played into what's going on currently in El Camino, and then Badger and Pete are like actively, like they kind of kick things off with the actual car and everything. We get a flashback with Jane, that's, you know, another one of those kind of inconsequential, but fan service, like, hey, you know, here she is, remember her?
Yeah.
No Saul, which I guess that was less of a need because it's like, hey, if you want to see more Saul Goodman, they've got that.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking this before, because it's called El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. I almost wonder if they might explore some of the other characters' fates as well, like what happened with Skyler and stuff like that. I don't know, though. I mean, like, Saul has his own show, like, and granted, it is pre the events of Breaking Bad, but...
Yeah, and I think it'd be harder. Like, I'm curious to see what happens to, like, Skyler and all that, like, in the context of maybe a bigger thing, but that might be a harder movie to make exciting, because, like... Characters like Jesse and Saul and stuff are involved in, like, shady, you know, crazy criminal stuff. And, like, Skyler is, I assume what that character would be doing is just trying to raise a family outside of all that craziness, you know?
I think, like, when I look back on Breaking Bad in retrospect, I kind of forgot what a huge part of the show the family drama is, mm-hmm. you know? So I think there is a lot of stuff there. I mean, Marie, her whole thing with Hank being dead and stuff, like what's going on with her? Like what are going to be the consequences, like legally, of Skylar being well aware of this meth thing happening and, you know, helping with the money laundering I remember her doing at one point, you know?
Right.
So there's some interesting stuff that they could do. I don't think it would be like a whole film specifically on that. The Skyler story or whatever. And I know she has incurred the ire of Breaking Bad viewers. Like, people fucking hate her for some reason.
Right.
Yeah, she's really... I forgot what amazing actress she is in that show.
She's great. Anna...
Gunn.
Anna Gunn, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember first seeing her in Deadwood.
Yeah.
And
she's in Seinfeld, too. She was in an episode of Seinfeld. Also, another person from Seinfeld. When Seinfeld had that, like, meta show called Jerry, where they pitched a show about nothing to NBC.
Right.
And then it aired, like, bits and pieces of it aired in one episode of Seinfeld. And the guy who played Kramer is the guy who owned the... junkyard, that guy.
Oh, that like that we see briefly in this, where he helps him. Is he helping him get rid of the El Camino? No, he discovers the LoJack tracking device on it here. Yeah, I would say, actually, speaking of Deadwood, this kind of reminds me of the Deadwood movie. Mm. That, you know, it's a show that is beloved and was off the air for a long time, and now it's like, oh, wow, I can't believe we're getting more Deadwood or Breaking Bad.
Yeah, well, unlike Deadwood, I feel like Breaking Bad could have just... You could have just had Breaking Bad, and that would have been fine. It kind of had a bow wrapped up. Like, even though we don't know exactly what happened with Jesse, that's fine. You know what I mean? We know he got out of there. But, like, Deadwood, I feel like there was, like just a ton of unanswered questions. Like the bad guy, if you just leave it how it was, like you were telling me, like the bad guy essentially wins.
It did not have a conclusion at all, whereas Breaking Bad had a very kind of definitive one. Like, yeah, the open-ended, like where's Jesse going type thing. But it reminded me of the Deadwood movie in that, like, you know, this isn't like, this isn't the height of the drama of the show at its peak, but it's more just like, hey, here's another couple hours in that world that you liked. You know, here's some characters. You know, let's revisit these characters and see how they are. You know, with Deadwood, it's different because it was like 10 years later or whatever, and this is like directly after. But I had the same feeling watching this as I did in the Deadwood movie, where it's like, oh, right, I really like Breaking Bad. Yeah. I like the way this is, the direction and everything. And some of the scenes were really tense. I thought one of my favorite scenes was when Jesse is going to Todd's apartment trying to find where he stashed all this money. Mm-hmm. And then these two guys who he thinks are cops, you know, come in. And I thought that was a really fun, like, tense scene where, like, when that gun appears when he first, you know, holds him hostage and everything. I thought that was super good. Trying to think of other ones. There's a duel in a welding place later on that I thought was really fun. You know, a bunch of guys that seem to be at least associated with the like white supremacist group and everything. And then they have the duel. And then there's the part where the mustache fake cop and Jesse are shooting at each other from like 20 feet away. And I feel like there's like 20 rounds that go off and they miss each other constantly.
Well, Jesse had that like smaller gun, which I guess was actually a really powerful gun that he hid from the other guy. So
22.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I think the 22 was the one that he was like that was visible in his pants.
The grandpa one.
Yeah, and then he had that smaller one that must have been stronger, hidden away, because that one just blew that guy away. So I think like he might have used the ammunition for that one, and then had to use the 22 to try to kill. That's why he shot at him a few times with that, and then took the handgun. And then it wasn't long after that the mustache guy was shot in the head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I thought that scene was really cool, and then that was a very Breaking Bad moment when he's like driving away as the place is exploding.
Totally.
I remember there's a lot of that in the show where it's like even one of the first like rebellious things that Walter does is when the dickhead at the gas station, and what does he do? He like opens up the hood and he puts like the mop or something on the thing. And he walks away as the car. Does it blow up or does it just?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I remember that being one of the first things. I could be wrong. Oh, I guess this is probably when they had the car wash, which came in like season 4, I want to say.
Yeah.
And I was saying earlier that like seasons 1 through 3, I feel like I got more and more and more into it. Mm-hmm. And then 4, I remember it's really good and it's really important to the story because that's when like Gus becomes like a really big thing. And I remember it ends extremely satisfying with the Gus stuff.
Right.
But I remember that being kind of a slower burn for most of the season. And then I remember being way back into it again with season 5.
Yeah, well, season 5 is when it all comes together.
I really love the ending of Breaking Bad. And there are a lot of shows that I've just been disappointed with how they kind of fizzled out rather than, you know, I always bring up Lost. But
yeah,
you know.
Well, there are so few shows that you can look back on and be like, this entire show was so good. This whole story was so good.
Yeah. And even if like 4 is my least favorite season, it was still like really, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's just an expertly made show and movie. Like, you know, I love Vince Gilligan's writing and directing and everything. And like just every actor he picked, Giancarlo Esposito, you know, for Gus and everything was so good. And I see that stuff now with Better Call Saul. Like, I'll see commercials or, like, clips on award shows or whatever. And it's like, oh, shit, I didn't know Gus was part of the show now. Because I have not seen Better Call Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a really good reason outside of, like, oh, wait, actually, I watched the first episode or two. But I just don't like prequels very much.
I don't either.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, great, Mike and Gus and Saul are in this. But, like, you remove the tension of anything super serious happening to them.
I always think that way, but then when I do see prequels, I'm always like, oh, I was totally wrong about that.
And you know what? And that's why I think I need to watch Better Call Saul is everyone. I've heard so many people say, like, it's actually better than Breaking Bad. It's so good. And I love Bob Odenkirk, and, like, I'd love to see more Gus scenes and everything. Yeah. I'm sure, and I trust Vince Gilligan. You know, everything he's done that I've seen has been awesome. So I really should give that show a chance.
Yeah, I remember watching the first season, and I really enjoyed it, but then I just, for some reason, I just fell off of it. But yeah, I mean, inherently, it's a lot. There's going to be a lot more, much more variation and stuff that happens because I would think Saul is dealing with all these different kinds of clients rather than just this like same group. I mean, there are characters from Breaking Bad in the show that are recurring, like Mike Ehrmantraut or whatever.
I think that was one of my concerns when I started watching. It was like in the first episode, I want to say, at the end of it, it's like they go to some guy's house and the door opens and it's Tuco. It's like, oh, remember Tuco? And I was like, ah, man, is this just going to be like, hey, we're shoehorning every character from Breaking Bad into it? It's like, oh, they've known each other for years. You know, but I don't think I have founded worries about that considering what people say about the show.
Right.
So I should at some point watch that.
Yeah, we should definitely.
Yeah. A couple notes I had from the beginning that I thought were funny were fucking Badger and Skinny Pete. They're keeping up the tradition of Breaking Bad, their depiction of video games being just like, I guess funny, but also frustrating. Like, I remember in the first run, I think they did an official like sponsorship thing with Rage, the id game. But it's so confusing because everyone knew that Rage was going to be like a Doom-like or attempting to be Doom-like first-person shooter when it was coming out. And then it's Jesse playing it with a light gun. And so it's like, did they build like a weird light gun build of this game to put it in Breaking Bad? Like, why doesn't he just play? That was really weird, I remember. But this one, oh God, they're playing just some, like, it's very unclear what's happening. There's a road at night and they're playing in first person driving a car. And then I just wish anybody was on set that had ever played a video game because like, I hate gamer talk and shows. And in this one, especially, it's like Skinny Pete was like, man, you're apexing too early. You're apexing too early. And it's like, man, I have played a million games with a million people. And I've never heard anyone talk like that. You're apexing too early.
Yeah. I feel like the worst example of that was, or maybe I should say the best example of that was in that show, Russian Doll, that we watched. We watched it for the podcast.
Oh, God. She's a game developer.
She's a game developer. And like, she was in some game developer meeting where she like had some picture of a 3D render of something and it would just look so shitty. And like, why would you ever be talking about this? Like, I've been to a few development studios, as have you, obviously.
Yeah.
And nothing like that ever. They're not going to discuss this shitty model.
Well, they had like an emergency meeting and it's supposed to be like Rockstar. I think it's like kind of implied. It's like New York City, it's like a Rockstar type studio or something. And they're having this like emergency meeting because like the walk cycle is broken and they're watching like a wireframe walk weird. But then like her game wound up being like, it looked like a shitty Flash clone of like Braid. And it's like, okay, get just anyone on set that's ever played really a fucking annoying. You know, maybe that's a future career for me, is just have me sit on sets of shows. If you're going to show a video game at any point,
they
and
should
I'll be
hire
like,
a consultant for that.
Yeah, and I'll be like, that doesn't look like video games.
Yeah, especially because now video games are, you know, it's not like a little niche thing that only nerds like or whatever.
Yeah.
Now everyone plays video games, so you can't really get away with that shit as much anymore.
Yeah. Fucking 40-year-old virgin, them playing Mortal Kombat Deception with a 64 controller. I think it's like a 64 controller and like a GameCube controller. It might as well be a fucking flight stick or something.
Yeah.
It's like, just get somebody on that fucking set.
I'll tell you what isn't annoying.
What's that?
Skinny Pete. What a good guy. He obviously really cared about Jesse. I thought what he did was very sweet.
I also loved how he apparently just has pockets full of burner phones charged and ready to go at all times, just because like him and his friends are all shady as hell. It's like, oh yeah, totally. Got a burner for
Yeah,
go for
but
it.
You know, he wanted to take care of him and like, you know, here's a clean towel and like
said he was
his
hero.
Shave and
like, oh, you're my hero, man.
Yeah, that was sweet.
Yeah, nice guy.
Yeah.
I also love that they just have a gigantic trampoline in the front yard of their shitty house. Thought that was really fun. It's 2 hours long. It's a lot of flashbacks. And it's a pretty simple story at the end of it. It's just like, oh, okay, Jesse escapes, but he's wanted by the law, so he's basically just trying to start over. Right. And you know, he talks to Robert Forster, who actually just died right after this came out, which was interesting. I forgot that he had been in the show, but you mentioned that he had shown up at some point.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that happening. He's like the kind of guy that you need a new identity to start fresh.
Yeah.
He sets you up and then does the transportation and everything.
Yeah, like fake passport and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it ends with, you know, he gets what he wants. He's able to kind of stow away.
Well, we don't exactly know, but we know that he ends up in Alaska and he has a fresh start. But it kind of ends the same way that Breaking Bad ends, where he's just driving off to really who knows what fate. But I think we can assume it's much more positive than, you know, the events of this movie were.
it's a much more peaceful, like, they both end with him driving a car off into an unknown future. Mm-hmm. But, like, the first one's just, like, manic screaming and laughing. And this one's like, yeah, Alaska's nice and quiet.
Yeah, well, yeah, at the end of Breaking Bad, he had just been released or escaped from, like, essentially being a, like, slave.
Tortured, like, by white supremacists in a cage. And, I thought it was interesting how they worked in the welder guy. I can't remember if that actor had actually shown up in the show or not. He looked kind of familiar, but even if he didn't, like, I thought those fake cop characters were played very well.
Yeah, totally.
Overall, I don't think this like matched the highest moments of Breaking Bad by any means, because obviously those had whole seasons, you know, leading up to the big moments. But this is totally like I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being back in that world.
I feel like worst case scenario, we would say like this movie really wasn't necessary. But I don't think that's the case at all. I think that it was a nice little bookend to Jesse's story. You know, we have this idea of the stuff he went through, and he seems way more mature now, and like, you know, confident and. You know, just gonna get a fresh start, and, you know, he has the flashbacks with Jane at the end, which I thought were a sweet callback, you know. Clearly, Jane meant a lot to him, because he was devastated after she died.
And I thought the tone of all the characters kind of matched with how they were in the show. It all seemed true to those characters, and just seeing some more scenes like that were solid. I would say Todd's, outside of Jesse, obviously, I think Todd was the one that I enjoyed his story in this more. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, again, he had more, I think he had more screen time than most of any of the other returning characters. So, yeah, overall, I'd say thumbs up on this. Yeah, if you're a Breaking Bad fan.
Absolutely. If you like Breaking Bad, then definitely watch this.
Indeed. Well, that'll be it for this week. As always, we want to thank those of you contributing to the Patreon for Painting the Stream. You can go to patreon.com/paintingthestream if you want to join in there. We keep it real simple. $5 a month, and you get an ad-free version of the podcast each and every week. You'll get a private RSS link sent to you, and you can get this ad-free every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. We also have a little, you know, it's a fun little community there. If you ever want to comment or anything or say anything in the Patreon, we read every comment and try to get involved with the conversation. So, thank you all to everyone that has helped us out there, and welcome
to
the Patreon.
Thank you guys so much. That's so cool of you. I'm glad you all like the podcast enough to do that.
Yeah, yeah. As always, though, it's not just the ad-free version of the podcast that you get. You also get a personalized Bonku from Bonk herself.
That's me. I'm Bonk.
Yes, and you will get that sent to you on the Patreon messaging system. That sounded like a weird old way to say, oh, the Patreon messaging service. We'll send you a message on Patreon with the Bonku. But also, we do read one Bonku per episode here on the podcast in Bonk.
We do.
We've got another Bonku this week.
Yes, we do, Daniel. This Bonku, I wrote for a gentleman named Neil. I mean, you think of Neil. Who do you think of? You think of Neil Diamond. You think of Neil deGrasse Tyson, Neil Young. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of really quality Neils out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a fun name. It's also a verb. You know, it's spelled differently.
Oh,
but
yeah, it is.
Neil.
You're right. Yep.
What can I say about Neil? He's a great guy. You know, I don't really know too much about him, but I racked my brain and I wrote this Bonku for him.
Oh, great.
The sunlight poured in through the blinds on the window. Neil sat eating bread.
Oh, that's good. Mm. I like that. He's at peace.
Yeah.
That's
peaceful
great.
Morning day, and he's just eating some bread at the table.
Good for Neil.
Yeah.
I hope it was good.
I hope you enjoyed that, Neil.
Yes, I hope you did too. Thanks, Neil. Thanks, Bonk, for that Bonku.
You are welcome, Daniel.
And thank all of you for listening. If you would like to reach out and give us any suggestions, recommendations, anything like that, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at PanTheStream. That'll let you know what to watch for the next week's episode if you'd like to watch along. Obviously, you don't have to, but if you don't, just know that we're probably going to spoil the hell out of everything we cover
yes,
on the show. That's
of course.
Kind of what we do, so you know what you're getting into. That's it. Thanks to Tom Manda for the theme song.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks to, like we said, each and every one of you that is out there listening, each and every one of you helping out on the Patreon, keeping the lights on. Thanks to Razor for being a good boy. He's definitely getting a treat here. And Bonk, thanks to you for being here with me each and every week.
Oh, thank you, my love.
We'll be back next week.
Goodbye, everyone.